dug it the most, and we'll see you soon. All right, thanks very much.
Opus Defunct, leading into the band's theme Blue Flame by the 1965 Woody Herman Band. The soloists, trumpeters Bill Chase and Dusko Gojkovic, tenorist Gary Klein, and no, not Mary Lou Williams on piano. That was Woody's little joke. In fact, it was arranger Nat Pierce. I'll be back at 5 next Saturday with more of your requests, but for now, goodbye from me, Alan Shipton. And here now on BBC Radio 3 is Claire Martin with Jazz Line Up.
Hello, on today's show, an interview with American pianist and bandleader Mark Carey. Mark Carey, and stay tuned for music and a full interview with Mark later on the show. Also on the programme, journalist Stephen Graham will be here to talk about the rebirth of The Cool and how the cool sounds of Miles Davis, Lee Konitz, Warren Marsh and Lenny Tristano continue to inspire new generations of jazz players. Before all that, though, let's get started with a track from award-winning Canadian jazz singer-songwriter and pianist Leila Bialy. Vancouver-raised and now Brooklyn-based, her Live in Concert album was played across 73 radio stations in North America. She's recorded and opened for many music superstars such as Chris Botti, Suzanne Vega and Sting, who's one of her biggest admirers. Well, let's hear her take on fellow Canadian songstress Joni Mitchell's Woodstock.
Thank you. and strong and everywhere there was song and celebration. And I dreamed I saw the bombers riding shotgun in the sky, and they were turning in to butterflies.
Taken from her Live in Concert album, that was Joni Mitchell's anthem to a generation of festival goers, Woodstock, sung by Leila Bialy, who is a new name to me, but what an amazing musician she is, and I'm excited to find her music and to hear her there with Phil Dwyer on saxophone, George Collar on bass, Larnell Lewis on drums, and Ben Whitman on percussion. And it's also worth mentioning how much Joni Mitchell's music continues to inspire and influence new jazz artists around the world. Let's hope Leila will grace our shores very soon. The much-acclaimed German saxophonist and ACT recording artist Christoph Lauer has a new release with the world-class Hamburg-based big band, the NDR. Celebrating the music of one of the founding fathers of jazz, Sidney Bechet, this new release is not a traditional jazz revival of his music, but instead it's an entirely new way of looking at the genius of this New Orleans native who was born back in 1897. The material has been brilliantly arranged by one of Germany's leading big band arrangers and composers, Rainer Tempel, who has approached the compositions from the perspective of younger players. Let's hear Kasbah, Song of the Medina.
Thank you.
Christoph Lauer and the NDR Big Band with Kasbah, Song of the Medina, from the new CD Petite Fleur, out on the ACT label, which celebrates the music of Sidney Bechet. And if you like big band music, you will be interested to hear about this exciting event, 100 years of big band jazz in 99 minutes, a special Father's Day afternoon concert. The Jazz Repertory Company's fascinating recreations of significant artists, concerts and jazz history, and that's at Chelsea's Cadogan Hall. With the 17-piece Pete Long Big Band, it's on the 15th of June, that's Father's Day, and it starts at 3:30. Last time they played at the Cadogan Hall, it was a sellout, so it promises to be a fantastic Father's Day out. We're also playing in a big band format soon will be one of the icons of the acid jazz scene, James Taylor. Described as the best Hammond player this side of the Atlantic by Six Music's Craig Charles, let's hear the very vibey Fuzzburn. That was the James Taylor Quartet with Fuzzburn. You can hear James in action at the Belgrave Music Hall in Leeds on the 26th of June, and with a big band and choir performing tunes from this new release at the Rochester Cathedral on June the 27th. That release is out now on the Real Self record label. Something very different now, featuring three very well-known and much-loved names in jazz. Composer, the late great Steve Gray, and vocalists Georgie Fame and Madeline Bell. In 1984, Steve Gray and Georgie Fame were involved in a concert for Dutch radio with the renowned Metropole Orchestra, when the idea was suggested for them to compose an original work together for the orchestra. The story was to be about a female singer's life, and to play the singer they chose their dear friend and favourite vocalist, Madeline Bell. With barely 3 weeks to complete the project, as the recording dates were very soon after the idea was given the green light, and with Fame still writing some of the lyrics during the actual recording, they were all immensely proud to have pulled it off. Well, 20 years later, in 2004, they were invited back to present the work in a matinee concert at Tilburg in Holland. Thanks to the Dutch radio authorities, the live concert version is now available on CD. And here's Madeline Bell, the star of The Singer, and it's the song The Blues and Me.
It's after hours, those wee small hours between night and day. I'm out relaxing instead of acting my part on the stage. Things I ought not to, nobody's business but mine, the blues and me, we get along fine. The room is hazy, the scene is crazy with foam carrying on. It's really something, the band is jumping, we party till dawn. A little somewhat uncaring, but we can do as we choose. The blues and me got nothing to lose. We swing and sway.
The wonderful voice of Madeline Bell with The Blues and Me, taken from the musical The Singer, written by Steve Gray and Georgie Fame. And that CD is available now on Proper Records. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Claire Martin, on FM, online and on digital radio. Coming up next, journalist Stephen Graham explores how the music of legendary musicians like Miles Davis, Lee Konitz, Warren Marsh and Lenny Tristano from the birth of the cool period are still proving to be a major inspiration to many of today's jazz players. He'll be telling us about the rebirth of the cool and why sounds like this continue to inspire. Move by Miles Davis. How cool is that? Cool broadened eventually into the West Coast sound and then splintered into, among other directions, chamber jazz, influencing the new ECM sound from the late 1960s and on. Lee Konitz, there at the birth of the sound with Miles at the Royal Roost in New York, can be heard on a brave new live album recorded not in the Big Apple but in London, which we'll hear shortly. And he continues to exert a strong influence on new generation of jazz musicians, inspired by the sound, interpreting it in their own way. But what does it mean to play it cool today, and who's doing all the cool running? To tell us about that cool thing, welcome to the Jazz Lineup studio, Stephen Graham.
Hello, Claire.
So, Stephen, birth of the cool. Tell us a bit more about that album and who was on it and its significance.
Well, I think its significance lies in a couple of aspects, really. It's a little bit murky, the discography of it, because it was a reissue several years after it was originally put out on a couple of, I think, 10 inches. So people are coming to the compilation, as it were, you know, which it seems odd to an extent. It was made at the end of the 40s. It was live sessions at the Royal Roost, and then it was in the studio. The arranging element of it was very strong, so you had different hands involved in the arranging, and I think that's as important as anything about the record, which makes it different. So you've got arrangements from Jerry Mulligan, you've got arrangements from John Lewis, you've got arrangements from Gil Evans, etc. The instrumentation is different as well, so you've got a tuba and you've got French horn, and it's a nonet, so very non-standard ways of looking at jazz at the time. It's not a big band, it's not a small group, and it's got these unusual instruments. So there are so many different aspects to it that make it stand out. there's a certain sense of the Baroque in the arranging, I would say, in a very light way, which another band in the Cool School developed, which was Modern Jazz Quartet, much more ostensibly. But it wasn't that commercial in music, so the way the jazz industry worked at that time was people had to move on. So I think...
It was 70 years ago. It seems like such a long time ago, and they were cool. I didn't realise it was late 40s.
Yes,
I thought it was
right.
a little bit later.
Towards
than that.
Really quite close to the start of Miles Davis's career.
Yeah. And right on the back of bebop as well. I mean,
Yes, that's right. I mean, it is still... there is bebop there. I mean, it's not as if, oh, it's suddenly not bebop.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
not like revolutionary in the sense that suddenly this brand new style basically cancelled out everything. It wasn't like Year Zero or anything like that. It was... an evolution. It was like standing back from bebop 3 or 4 years after the real heat of the movement, and basically moved into a new space, which in a way was a conduit to something else coming through. Miles himself would have moved on to, you know, do records like Relaxin' and so on with Prestige. And when you listen to the Prestige records later on, it's very different. You know, it's much more nightclub music, standards. It's not so much to do with arranging. So, you, again, that's another thing that really brings it back to this specific period in time, which these young bands today are now drawing on to a greater or lesser extent. And I think there's a lot of new bands coming through, some of which are completely new. They've only come along, like Tori Freestone recently plays a little bit cool sometimes, Rachel Cohen, several other bands as well, a lot of them associated with the Whirlwind label. So it's great when you get a label coming along, which actually... has a unique identity, as it were, a bit like ECM, which I think Cool eventually, in a hybrid way, influenced Manfred Eicher's label when it started in the end of the 1960s.
Can this music work without a drummer? Is it massively rhythmic? What's the setting? What does it have to be, the lineup?
I think instrumentation isn't so important. I don't think piano really is the, with certainly with the new bands, it seems to be more guitar coming through. I think back in the coolness of the movement, the pianoless grouping, you know, with Jerry Mulligan and Chet Baker, showed that basically the harmonic underlay didn't have to be quite so explicit as it might have been in bebop.
Yeah.
But as I say, today, the harmony instrument seems to be more guitar than piano. And I don't think it's a massively dependent on any particular instrument, though.
Right. Well, let's just hear this group coming up now. Lee Konitz on a new record with bassist Michael Janisch at the Pizza Express Club in Soho, which so many great musicians have played in. And it's a really exciting collaboration. Perhaps you'll tell us about what we're about to hear, which is All the Things You Are. And the album's called First Meeting. This really was a non-rehearsed, let's just go in and do it. I mean, can it work like that? Is it okay for audiences to come in and pay £30 and it could just, anything could happen? I mean, is that, it's a big chance, isn't it?
Definitely. I mean, there's no safety net involved at all. Lee's playing soprano sax on this, which is very unusual. And I think that's one of the things that the label has pointed out, that, you know, this is one of the distinctive things about the record. But, you know, there are a lot of risks involved. You know, it's like an actor without a script in a way. But someone with Lee Konitz's, you know, massive experience and huge jazz knowledge, performance knowledge more than anything, I suppose that's the way he wants it. And he had to be in the company of like-minded musicians from a younger generation, even.
Well, let's hear it from the album First Meeting. It's Lee Konitz, Dan Tepfer, Michael Janisch and Jeff Williams playing All the Things You Are. Thank you. All the Things You Are with Lee Konitz playing soprano, and that was recorded in Soho at the Pizza Express Jazz Club. And it was called First Meeting because Stephen, of course, they just met and just did it. I mean, it was pure jazz, wasn't it? Improvisation from beat one. But Stephen, Lee Konitz is in his 80s now. I mean, such an important figure of jazz and really represents perhaps a godfather of this music, handing it down. Do you think that's fair to say?
I think so. He's one of the last left from that generation. You know, you think Jerry Mulligan's gone, John Lewis has gone, Miles, obviously, and Gil. Mm. It's not just that, though. I mean, it's like the music seems to, you know yourself, it seems to reinvent itself with little variations as the years pass. New people come along and find new things that perhaps the people in there at the off didn't actually realise. With the passage of time, that's benefited jazz in so many ways. And I think his contribution, apart from playing on a very good record like this, also represents that re-examination of the music.
Sure. So this cool movement we're talking about, when it first happened, did the recording sell well? And also, is it easy for us now to buy those recordings, to really get the history of it?
Well, it is quite easy to get them. They've been in circulation for a long time. They didn't sell well initially, as far as I'm aware. Miles then changed tack, actually, after a little while, and he went to record for Prestige, more in the bop kind of club setting music again, not necessarily live, but it wasn't quite as arranged. He came back to it later on with Gil Evans, with Sketches of Spain and so on, a decade later.
Yeah.
You know, so he did change tack, probably because of the cutthroat, you know, record industry demands on him to a certain extent. There is a certain amount of this music is quite good from a critical point of view, but like a lot of musics that have great critical standing don't necessarily sell, you know, by the millions.
Tell me about it. but you can appreciate this style. I think that this style is really accessible, and it's a really good way to introduce somebody to hearing jazz, perhaps for the first time. It's not as frantic as bebop. There's not so many notes where you feel like it's music for musicians. Perhaps it's not so flashy. It's cool. So, I mean, would you agree with that? Do you think this is much
definitely fun? I mean, I think the way it's been used a lot in movie soundtracks, when you think of, in more recent years, something like the talented Mr. Ripley, that
yes,
score.
Yes, that's a great...
And in a way, that's cool. That's going back to, you know, the whole Chet Baker thing fascinates the Italians and all the French, you know, some of the coolest people on earth, you know. And it's amazing how it does pop up a lot.
Mm.
People might not actively listen to it, but because it's got that languid, very woozy, you know, sometimes noirish feel, not necessarily, but sometimes it has that.
We're talking about the record we just heard, Lee Konitz, but if you were to say to someone just to get started on the first three albums, what would you suggest?
Rebirth of the Cool, definitely. I think that's... I think you might want to go for a Chet Baker record as well. I mean, you could just go for a track, Let's Get Lost or something like that.
Lovely, yes.
And I think if you were being really adventurous, you might want to go for some Lenny Tristano, perhaps.
It's kind of got a flavour to it. It's got a mood to it. You can almost feel like you're there when you're listening to it. I was listening to Let's Get Lost only this weekend, funny enough. And you do feel like you are in that time out in California. I always think of sunshine as well, heat.
That's right. And when you see the pictures of Chet, particularly, you know, whether it's daytime or nighttime, those shots, just almost like you can't really play any other music to accompany that whole Jerry Mulligan, Chet Baker, going back to the Birth of the Cool, there is no way out of that, really.
Mm. Let's talk about the release we're about to hear now. The track is an ECM recording by the fantastic guitarist Wolfgang Muschbühl. He's teamed up with two amazing musicians, perhaps my favourite drummer ever, Brian Blade, and Larry Grenadier on bass. And it's called Driftwood. So this is very new, very current, but it's cool.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think there's the title track is a free improvisation. The rest are composed. Wolfgang told me recently that he had composed it just before a tour with the musicians on the record. So he had written, he'd set aside some time, wrote the tunes about a month before the tour. And then at the end of, I think, 7 dates, they went into the studio. So this kind of modern day version of Cool, now people might say, this is so different to what Miles
was
doing.
Yes, I was going to say that.
I mean, there are a couple of things to be said there. I mean, it's, you know, so many years on, the music has changed so much. The instrumentation is different, and there's no guitar to really identify the initial burst of the Cool. But when you listen to Brian Blade and that openness, that pulse that a lot of people, you know, quite rightly make a big issue about in jazz, it's there. It's that kind of languid setting back from almost looking on top of the music.
Yes, and that's a nice way of putting it. Yeah,
Lontano, or whatever you want to call it. And there is that. And I think it's quite remarkable. And I think this record will open up people to, you know, this new sound. You know, Wolfgang's a little bit like Jakob Bro, the Danish guitarist who's worked with Lee Konitz as well. And the interesting bit about the ECM connection with Cool is when the label started, they recorded a lot of Scandinavian artists, some American artists, but in the 90s they decided to do a reissue, and they reissued a 1961 Jimmy Jufre album, which was a compilation, basically Fusion and Thesis, and they called it 1961, and that had Steve Swallow on it, it had Paul Blay, and it had Jufre, and so you can see the connection explicitly between Cool and ECM.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's been fascinating, and I'm definitely music that I love and appreciate, and I'm a big fan of Wolfgang Mushbill. So let's hear the title track. It's called Driftwood, and as you say, purely improvised piece with the fantastic Larry Grenadier and Brian Blade. Thank you very much, Stephen, for coming in.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That was Wolfgang Mühlspiel and the Austrian guitarist debut as leader on ECM, featuring Larry Grenadier on bass and the fantastic Brian Blade on drums. And that track was the title to the album, written by all three of the players, called Driftwood. And our thanks to Stephen Graham for talking about all things cool. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Claire Martin, on FM, online and on digital radio. The iconic jazz record label Blue Note turned 75 in 2014. The irresistibly swinging jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra and its musical director Wynton Marsalis celebrate an anniversary that embraces the entire history of modern jazz from bebop to the dance floor, performing big band arrangements of unforgettable classics from the treasure trove of a label that's been home to a host of major jazz stars down the decades, from Herbie Hancock, Wayne Shorter, McCoy Tyner and Art Blakey, just to name a few. Described by the Daily Telegraph as the finest big band in the world today, let's hear the swinging and very sassy Blues Walk. Blues Walk from Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra with Wynton Marsalis. And they are celebrating the best of Blue Note records, and tour dates for the UK have been announced. They start on Friday the 20th of June at the Harrogate Festival. They're in Manchester at the Bridgewater Hall on Monday the 23rd of June, Bristol on the 26th of June at Colston Hall, and finish in Edinburgh at Usher Hall on Friday the 27th of June. That's Jazz at Lincoln Center's Orchestra with Wynton Marsalis, celebrating the best of Blue Note records. For more information on all of those dates and more, check out the Jazz Lineup link via the Radio 3 website. The press around violinist Adam Baldish is quite fantastic, calling him without doubt the greatest jazz violinist alive today. And indeed, the young Pole is causing quite a stir on the European jazz scene. He's recorded a new CD called Duo Art, The New Tradition, with the Paris-based Israeli pianist Yaron Herman, and the result is quite breathtaking. With almost tangible chemistry, the pair have created a beautiful record. This melody really moved me as I was driving around the Sussex Downs the other day. It's written by both of the players and it's called Letter to E. Thank you. Brand new on ACT Recordings, that was the sublime Letter to Eve from violinist Adam Bolditch and pianist Yaron Herman, taken from the new CD, Duo Art, The New Tradition. American pianist, keyboardist, producer and composer Mark Carey has a new release out with his Focus Trio. Four Directions features Samir Gupta on drums and tabla, Bernice Earl Travis II on bass and Rashan Carter on acoustic bass. Jazz lineup's Kevin Ojonro caught up with him a few weeks ago when Mark was in the UK. But before we hear the interview, here's a taste of Mark on piano and a piece dedicated to his former band leader, the one and only Betty Carter. This is Waltz, Betty, Waltz. Thank you.
That was Waltz, Betty, Waltz by Mark Carey's Focus Trio from the album Four Directions on Motimar Records. And I'm pleased to say that I'm joined by Mark Carey. Welcome to Jazz Lineup.
Thank you for having me.
Let's talk a bit about the band. So it's you on piano and Fender Rhodes, Samir Gupta on drums and tablas, and Rashan Carter on basses. Mm-hmm. I know that you've been together for many years now. Mm-hmm. It's an East-West Coast connection, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
Tell me more about that.
Well, I met Samir and David Ewell, which is the original bass player. I met them in the Bay Area. And I was traveling out there performing with various artists like Russell Gunn and Abby Lincoln. And I met these guys through a brilliant gentleman by the name of Charles Brack. And he was the person that pretty much facilitated the connection between Samir and I and David. And the moment we met, it was definitely a kindred spirit. And it was a mutual kind of desire to play together. So Charles Brack once again facilitated a few gigs. And at that point, we got our momentum. And this was about 14 years ago, you know. Right when I put out a record called Trillium with the great Nasheed Waits and Taris Mateen, that was going to be the original trio. But at that time, it was a process finding work. So they found work with the great Jason Moran.
Yeah,
which I was pretty salty about it at the time. But, you know, now when I look back, man, you know, it was great for them because they got to take care of their families and work. You know, where it took me a minute to really get this momentum that I had.
I understand exactly what you're saying, but if you think of it from our point of view as listeners, we've now got two great trios.
Exactly. Yeah, I can't be mad.
So,
I
mean, everybody's a winner.
Everybody's really a winner. And Jason is a really good friend of mine, so it's, you know.
So you're New York based. You're originally from Washington, D.C. So in practical terms, did they end up moving to New York to be part of the group?
Two-thirds of the group are in New York. And David went on to explore some other channels of creativity and also work, you know. But Samir committed himself to developing this group, and he moved to New York for that sole purpose.
Which is a sign of commitment, isn't it?
It's one of the biggest signs of commitment that anyone has ever shown me besides, you know, of course, marriage and things like that.
It's another form of commitment.
Yeah, another form of commitment. But, yeah, it's really a beautiful thing to know that a person would do that, you know, and it gave me a lot of motivation to make things happen and or to help facilitate things to happen.
So as I mentioned before, you're playing piano, acoustic piano and keyboards in this group. Mm-hmm. The whole group sound, the ensemble voice, is electro-acoustic. Mm-hmm. There are purely acoustic tracks at times, but the keyboards feature a lot. And many years ago, you made a really interesting record called Roads Ahead. Mm-hmm. Where you were focusing on the electric piano, mm-hmm. and also synthesizers. And I remember interviewing you at the time, and the thing that you said to me, which has stuck in my mind, is any time I sit down and play the Rhodes, I see sunshine. Mm-hmm. This idea of colors coming mm-hmm. through the keyboard. Mm-hmm. And textures are a very important part of the group.
Totally.
Was it always in your mind to have a piano trio, in inverted commas, which is not purely acoustic?
You know what it is? I've never had in my mind any pure thoughts of, I don't think of music that way.
Right.
I really look for...
it's whatever's appropriate.
Yeah, really. If people request a certain kind of performance from me, I try to accommodate that. But if it's left up to me to be creative, you know, then you'll probably get a wide range of, you know, textures and sounds. But, you know, I have fun playing the piano just as much as I do all the other keyboard instruments that are available. I don't limit myself to acoustics or electronics. I don't really think about it like that because they're all frequencies and they can all be manipulated. And
there's not a divide between the two. It's a question of the color that suits, I suppose, the mood that you're trying to create in the
definitely.
Music.
Definitely. I often think of it like cooking, you know. There's certain flavors that enhance other, you know, ingredients. I really think that music has recipes and it has ingredients. And I try to be conscious of the, you know, the ingredients that I put in my music just as well as my food. So I try to put things that are, you know, whole foods, man, things that can provide nutrition and sustenance.
On that note, let's listen to the very organic, very tasty sound of the Fender Rhodes.
Yes. Thank you.
Mark Carey's Focus Trio from the album Four Directions. Mark, this record has had a really, really good reception. Yes. It's met with a lot of critical acclaim, but it's not the first record that the Focus Trio has recorded. As you say, it's been a group with a 14-year history. Yeah. How do you think it's developed in that time?
Well, I think not being quite under the microscope of the powers that be in this music community, we've been able to really just expound on our own creativity and use our resources to facilitate things to happen. I think because we had that freedom, we weren't made to follow a path that, you know, wasn't ours. So what you hear is pretty much, you know, what we want to do, what we want to present. It's truly us.
There was definitely a real sense of freedom on stage when I saw you. That level of communication is very important, and everybody seems to be expressing themselves very spontaneously.
Yeah, the communication is so important in so many ways. Outside of, you know, musical cues and things like that, it's their vibrations. There comes times when we're playing that's, you know, Samir's hand might be cramping up or Rashawn's bass might not be working right, so I can tell just by body language, and they can tell by my body language what I feel like. So 14 years definitely developed a different form of communication outside of words or hand gestures or anything. It's just really become subliminal. It's become a part of our almost a mental telepathy, you know.
It's definitely a good way of putting it. Yeah. The blues is very important to you. We should say that you're from Washington, D.C.,
yes.
Which is a fantastic city in terms of African-American musical traditions.
Yes.
Ellington, some great blues musicians from there as mm-hmm. well. The club Pigfoot, you know, this fantastic guitar bill, this fantastic history. So the blues is always there, but the music also goes in so many different directions as well. Mm-hmm. Do you think that kind of innate blues quality is just your birthright, and whatever you do, wherever you go, it still kind of be there?
Oh yeah, you know, there's a lot of spirituality in the blues. There's a lot of openness in the blues. I definitely do not run from the blues. I don't look for them, but they're always there, and that color is a part of my infrastructure.
Great. I think we have time for one more piece. I'll ask you to introduce it and maybe tell us what inspired it. This is Indigenous.
Oh yes. Indigenous is really based on the word itself, from a place, and it deals with the concept of things coming from somewhere. So that's what this song is about.
Great. Yeah. Mark Carey's Focus Trio, Indigenous. Mark, it's been a real pleasure talking to you.
It's my pleasure, Kevin. Yeah.
Hope to see you in the UK again soon.
Yeah, man.
Thank you.
From the album Four Directions, that was Indigenous by Mark Carey. And fascinating insights from Mark there, and our thanks to Kevin Ajonra for that interview. Well, that's nearly it from Jazz Line Up this week, but there's plenty more jazz with Jeffrey Smith tonight at midnight. And Jess Nelson on Monday night at 11 will present highlights from the Emulsion Festival, featuring performances from Trish Clue's Tangent, Dan Nichols' Strobes, and Ian Ballamy and Thomas Stronan's Food. I'll be back next week with concert music by Gareth Lacrain's Grooveyard, recorded at this year's AMSA Jazz Time Festival in Cardiff. But to sign off, more evidence of the rebirth of the cool sounds, this is the MJQ Celebration, who are vibes player Jim Hart, pianist Barry Green, bassist Matt Ridley and drummer Steve Brown. Their special guest on this outing is sax man Dave O'Higgins, and this is the title track from their new CD, The Golden Striker. From me, Claire Martin, until next time, bye-bye.
The Golden Striker, played by Jim Hart, Barry Green, Matt Ridley and Steve Brown, ending this week's edition of Jazz Lineup. The programme was presented by Claire Martin and produced in Glasgow by Sushil K. Dade. For more information on Jazz Lineup, go to the programme page via the Radio 3 website.
Between the Ears is back this June.
Enveloped by this strange thing called sound.
The adventure in sound continues.
What happens when we finally get to meet our heroes?
Lenny Henry stars in Dear Mr. Elliot, When Groucho Met Tom.
Dear Tom,
a musical fantasy woven round the real-life encounter of T.S. Eliot and Groucho Marx in June 1964.
There is this elegiac thing of two old prize fighters. There's an opportunity for them to look back.
Between the Ears is Dear Mr. Elliot, starring Lenny Henry. This evening at 9:30, the adventure in sound continues here on BBC Radio 3. BBC Radio 3. Between the Ears, starring Lenny Henry, here on BBC Radio 3.
Well, time now is 7:30 and time for Radio 3 Live in Concert, which tonight is from the medieval fortress of Chirk Castle in Wrexham. And it's introduced by Sian Parry-Hughes.
Thank you, Jill, and welcome to what is both a castle and a stately home. A stronghold built initially for Edward I to control the Ceiriog and Dee valleys on the border between Wales and England. But Chirk Castle is also a place where music has been performed for hundreds of years. For Live in Concert this evening, we'll be hearing pieces from the 16th and 17th century, many of them unique to this castle. They include works by William Mundy and Thomas Tallis. They'll be performed in the castle's chapel by the Brabant Ensemble, 10 singers and their director, Stephen Rice. And some works will also be accompanied by organist Christian Wilson. They've all been rehearsing here during the day, and earlier we were able to catch up with one of the choir members, Claire Edington.
We're very excited to be here with the Brabant Ensemble today, performing music from the Chirk Castle part books in the chapel of Chirk Castle. It's absolutely stunning surroundings, and to sing the music in the setting where it was published and where it was originally performed gives you a real sense of what the music's about and the time and the history of the music itself. We've all been working together for quite a long time now, and it's lovely to work with a group of people and with Stephen who you've known for a while and have explored a few different composers and types of music together and sung it in a lot of different settings. I think especially today a real highlight is O Lord in Thy Wrath by Byrd. It's an English text version of Ne Eruscaris Domine, which is one of his better-known Latin text motets. And it's a really evocative piece about Jerusalem being left deserted and racked. And when you hear it in the English, especially knowing what was going on at the time, I think it's actually really incredibly moving to be singing it and to be singing it here.
And that's Claire Edington. We'll hear that piece later in the programme. So it's going to be quite an evening hearing verse anthems which haven't been professionally performed here for hundreds of years. The concert is part of the Gricanog Festival, and during the interval I'll have the opportunity to speak with Artistic Director Dr. Sian Davis about the festival and this year's war-related theme. And I'm sure she'll also want to pay tribute to Dr. David Evans, whose memorial concert this is. Dr. Evans worked for many years on the part books of Chirk Castle, from which much of this evening's music comes. So we'll be hearing the fruits of his labour. I'll also be talking with Dr. William Reynolds about his recent editions of works by John Amner, and also one by William Dean, who was the organist here at Chirk Castle, and the man who prepared the original part books for use in the chapel. The first three items we'll hear in tonight's concert are from the 16th century. Blessed Are They That Fear the Lord by Christopher Tye. Deliver Me From My Enemies by Robert Parsons, and both those pieces transcribed by David Evans. And firstly, Te Deum for Trebles by William Mundy, edited by Stephen Rice, director of the Brabant Ensemble. The singers now making their way onto the stage in the chapel of Chirk Castle. Six ladies, four gentlemen, 10 of them in all, and the director, Stephen Rice. So this is William Mundy's Te Deum for Trebles.